Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. So many people ask the question, how do you become a speaker? They want to know how to take thought leadership and their expertise to a new platform, to speak in front of hundreds of people, to feel comfortable, and to know that those people want to hear your message. Well, I've got the perfect guest today who is going to answer this question and share all about her speaking career and what she does. Her name is Neen James, and she's a keynote speaker. She's also a leadership coach, and she's joining us today. Now, Neen is really special because she's known as not only a motivational speaker, but they call her a force of nature, and she's pretty much boundless energy. So, Neen, I am so happy to have you on the show today. Welcome.
G'day. What a treat to be able to serve your listeners. Thanks for having me as part of your important show.
Well, it is our pleasure, and, you know, the listeners probably know about you because I do want to mention that Marcello Petalino, who is on the show and who is a good friend of yours, was singing your praises. He absolutely adores you, and I know listeners are just going to love you as well. So really excited to chat with
you. He's awesome, and I would encourage your listeners to check out his book, Celebrate Life, and definitely listen to the brilliant interview that he did with you. So he is a fantastic role model for anyone who wants to be able to run their business, not only in a way that is profitable, but also that is stylish. He does everything first class, that man.
He sure does. He's amazing. And I also noticed that he keeps around very inspirational people.
VIPs. I read about that in one of my books, and so did he. Exactly.
Exactly. And you are definitely, definitely one of them. So I just want to point out that you were kind of living this corporate life in Australia, then you made a switch. Now you own your own company, you're a keynote speaker, you're an author. What set you on a course to the entrepreneurial lifestyle? How did this all change?
I loved corporate. I had so much fun working in corporate business in Australia, and I had the privilege of working in retail banking, the telecommunications, and the oil industry. And Deirdre, you've got to imagine, there's not a lot of chicks in oil in Australia.
No.
And I loved it, but what I wanted was more freedom. You see, in corporate business in Australia, we are blessed to have full weeks of vacation a year, which I know is more than we have in America, but Americans, we work so hard here. Australians work hard, but they play hard, and I think that's the big difference. And I wanted more freedom. I wanted more opportunity to take vacations, and having my own practice was going to allow me to do that. So I really did it as a desire for more freedom.
And you found it. I love it.
I love entrepreneurial life.
That's awesome. And, you know, because you have this entrepreneurial lifestyle and you're sort of living your dream, you're speaking. And I just find, Neen, that a lot of people are really curious about starting their own speaking career. And it's hard. You know, sometimes you don't know where to turn, but maybe you could just shed some light on how did you start yours?
Well, just so your listeners know, I didn't study to be a speaker. That was not really a thing when I was in school. Someone said, hey, you can be a speaker. So I didn't even know it was a profession. So for me, I didn't even think it was a real job. When I was in corporate business, someone said to me, you know, you should be a speaker. And I remember saying to them, can you make any money doing that? Well, obviously you can. And I love it. But for me, what I did was, it was very easy for me to make the switch from the corporate life to the entrepreneurial life as a speaker, because I had chosen throughout my corporate life to spearhead projects, to lead initiatives. I was always doing updates to the board. I was often speaking at updates at the management meeting. I'd stand up and train people. I was very comfortable in front of an audience. And when you track my career, you can see that some of my key promotions were because I stood on my feet and spoke. And I think there's something very powerful about taking a leadership position in a room by standing to deliver. And then I found the National Speakers Association in Australia. In America, it's NSA, National Speakers Association. Now, finding this organization was great, just like your listeners in the companies they work with and the industries they're part of, they would have an association. And maybe your listeners are unaware, but there's actually an association just for speakers, for experts who speak. And so that's basically how I started. And for me, it was interesting because I had a corporate profile, and when I left to start my own company, some of the people who knew me asked me to come and speak to their teams. So I really fell into speaking, but I absolutely love it. I think I am so privileged to get to stand in front of audiences and serve them around the world. It's a real honor to do what I do.
Yeah, that's amazing. It sounds like you were naturally doing something that you liked in the corporate world, and then you were able to kind of take that out into your new life and relying on your network as well. So it seemed like that played a big part of it.
Yeah, and I think for anyone listening, your network is one of the most key assets that you'll ever develop, is those people around you that you trust, those connections that you can refer business to and that they can refer you. And for anyone considering an entrepreneurial lifestyle, your network is vital. It's one of the most important things you'll create.
So, Meen, what do you do if you know you have the ability to speak in you, but you don't necessarily get that practice on the job? But you know you want to be a speaker. How can you kind of transition into what would be some smaller opportunities, or where might you start with that?
I always tell people, the more you speak, the more you speak. And what I mean by that is, the more that you look for opportunities to speak, the more you'll get invited to speak in other opportunities. Every small group that includes Rotary, your Chamber of Commerce, your industry meetings, whatever association you're part of, people are always looking for speakers. And so you can speak as often as you want to. Now, if you want to get paid for it, that's a completely different conversation. But if you want to start to practice, there are organizations you can get involved in. The National Speakers Association is one of them. There's an organization called Toastmasters, which can help you really develop your speaking skills. While I've never been a part of that, some of my speaker friends have, and that's a really great way to hone your skills. So if you want to speak, the more you speak, the more you speak. So stand and look for those opportunities. And it could be as simple as volunteering to run your team meeting, or facilitating a leadership retreat, or being a offering to train a team member in something. Because the more you stand on your feet and deliver, the more experience you get, the more confidence you gain, and therefore what happens is the audience see that you're having a good time, and you get to test it out. So you can still speak when you're paid by someone, but you can also seek opportunities outside in your community to stand in service of your community.
I agree, and I also think that the advice about practicing is really good. As you're practicing, and even if you're doing the smaller opportunities, the Rotary clubs and the local organizations, you just never know who's in the audience and who knows someone else where you might get a recommendation or a referral that could actually lead you more toward a paid speaking career, which is really exciting.
I always treated, and I still to this day, treat every speech as if it was the most important speech I'm giving, and whether it is paid or not, I always treated it as the most important speech. So every time you stand and deliver, don't think about whether you're being paid or not. Think about how can you be fully present for that audience today, and how can you serve them? And then you bring your best game.
That's excellent. And I'm sure that being, you know, if every speech is the most important speech, you have a lot of prep work probably that goes into each one. Do you find yourself that every group is different and that you're doing your homework and prepping?
Oh, yeah. And if you want to pursue this as a profession, even more so. So while there are topics that I'm very known for, as you know, Deirdre, my focus has always been in the area of productivity. And more recently, we've really shifted some of our messaging into this whole idea of how do you get people to pay attention. But every time I speak to an audience, I always tailor my message for that audience, which means I have to spend significant time researching the organization, interviewing key leaders, understanding their acronyms, understanding their biggest challenges. What is it that keeps them awake at night? What's the best solutions I can provide for them to keep the time together with them both practical and implementable so they can take away things to apply at work, at home, and in their community? So for me, preparation is just not honing my speech, my performance. It's also the business side and the customization side of what I do. And so the 1 hour on stage looks really easy, and that's my desire. My desire is to my clients that it looks really easy. But to make it look that easy, there's a lot of preparation that's involved. I'm always refining my message. I'm always honing my craft. I work with speech coaches. I work with performance coaches. I work with writers, editors, people that can help me really make sure that every time I stand in front of that audience, that I'm standing in service of the best version of myself. Preparation is vital if you want to consider speaking a profession.
Yeah, no, I think that preparation is so important. And, Neen, you know, it does lead to being able to connect with your audience on a deeper level. If you understand them, and they're your champions. When you go out there, they want you to succeed. Do you think there are certain characteristics that people are looking for, or even the people who are hiring the speakers? You know, you said that you didn't necessarily envision yourself as a speaker, but are there characteristics that people would expect of a speaker?
You bet. Absolutely. I think the number one thing is authenticity. And I can spot a fake speaker a mile away. And the audience wants to know that the person who's on stage is relatable, approachable, and so that authenticity, and to me, that's vital. I'm exactly the same person if you see me on the stage in front of 5,000 people or if you see me at 5 a.m. at the airport. I'm the exact same person, and that's important to me because it actually makes my job easier because I don't have to put on any airs and graces. It's just the
exactly.
same, right? So I think authenticity is a key characteristic. The second thing that I think you need to have is you need to have a true desire of service. Because service, standing in service of an audience, means it's not actually about me, Deirdre. It's all about my audience and the experience we're going to create together. So the second characteristic I think is vital is service. And if you have service, you can't have ego. Now, don't get me wrong. I have a really healthy ego. Mm-hmm. I'm really proud of the work that I do. But I think if you really want to stand in service of an audience, you've got to make it a conversation, not a presentation. So the characteristic of being able to perform so that they are entertained and engaged, but to serve so that they feel like they can have this conversation with you and that you're really sharing ideas with them to make their lives better, more value, you know, to be more valuable, to be more connected, whatever the purpose of your speech is. I also believe that really not only is it necessary to be able to be authentic and to be able to perform, but you have to have content. You have to have a quality message that people want to listen to. Too often I see speakers get up there and regurgitate everyone else's stuff, and that's just stupid. Like, don't vomit everyone else's intellectual property. Create your own, because every speaker that I've ever met has a unique story, unique experiences. So if you're considering speaking as a career, what you want to consider is what's your unique intellectual property. And that's how you can really serve your audience, by sharing those lessons with them.
Well, that's how you can definitely tell the real speakers from those who really are not making a career out of speaking. I think you just gave three really, really important tips right there. Neen, is there anything that you learned about yourself as you became a speaker? What did you learn about yourself personally, maybe that you didn't even realize when you started speaking?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think in the early days of my speaking, I thought that I needed to be polished and I needed to teach people something, and I had answers and they would really benefit from listening. Ego, right? That's so stupid. And so I can, I look back at old footage and I'm embarrassed for myself about how many times, I use the word I. And the evolution of that has, what I've learned is, the better speaker that I've become is because, I don't tell stories about me anymore. I tell stories about things I've observed, other success stories, and there's more about we than me. And that's what I think is important. So my evolution has been understanding that the more real I am, the more fun I am, the more myself I am, the more connected I become to my audience. Whereas I thought I had to be polished and perfect, and that was actually disconnecting me from my audience. So the evolution of my own speaking journey has been gone from perfection to authenticity. And I think that any time I get to choose, authenticity wins every single time. And so it's really learning about not talking about me, not making examples about me. It's really not about me. And I can pick a new speaker because all they do is, I did this and I did that and I climbed the mountain and I did this. That's great. I mean, that's amazing for them. But your audience doesn't care. What your audience wants to know is, what's in it for them? How do they apply it? And if you can share a story with them that makes them trigger a memory or someone they thought of or something they can do in their own life, that's awesomeness. So for me, it was getting myself out of the way and making it more about the audience. And then you have so much more fun. So that was a really good learning for me.
Well, that's a really good learning experience, because it is. It's all about them. Did you ever, and this might be hard to answer, but did you ever have an experience on stage where afterward you weren't so happy about your performance and, somebody actually gave you some criticism or critique, or maybe it was even negative? And how did that feel? How did you handle it? Does that just come along with the job?
No, it never gets easier. So just, it never gets easier. And yes, I have bombed. And any speaker who tells you that they haven't is lying. Right. But I just haven't experienced it yet. Absolutely. I have had situations where maybe I thought I did a great job and it wasn't fabulous. Or I knew I didn't do a great job and it just wasn't connecting. Of course I've had those situations. But my philosophy on feedback is potentially different to maybe some of your other guests. My philosophy is, if someone says to me, hey, Ming, can I give you some feedback? My response is always this, no, not today. And so I just stop people. I just stop them because I don't believe in a society where we give unsolicited feedback. I don't agree with it and I don't think it's useful. Now, what I will do, though, is I will seek feedback from people who are qualified to give it, Deidre. So by that I mean, if I want to know how I was as a speaker for my client, I'm going to ask my client. If I want to know how I was with my microphone and the sound, I'm going to ask the sound engineers. If I want to know how I was as a professional speaker, I'm going to ask another professional speaker. I only seek feedback from people who are qualified to give me feedback. So when people fill out those smiley sheets, those evaluation forms, I really don't pay a huge amount of attention to them. Not because I think I'm better than that, not because it's an arrogant thing, because I don't know what kind of day they've had. I don't know what side they got out of the bed. I don't know if they had a fight with their cat or their dog. I don't know. I don't know that stuff. And so I think what you've got to do is you've got to take some of that feedback. What I think is really painful is when you get the criticism that you know is true. So I spoke for a group earlier this year, and I got two comments, and it was really not my audience and the job that I was doing as a favor for a friend. And when I got these two comments, I cried. I was so upset by these two comments. They hurt because we all want to be liked. We all want people to think we're fabulous, and I'm no different to anyone else. It's just when I stand in service of people, I'm standing in service of 5,000 people as opposed to 5 people. So there's more people who can find things they don't like. But the thing was, those two people had very true things to say. And as a result of that, I shifted and deleted 2 stories from my speech. Never used them again. So what I think that teaches is that you have to listen with filters. Now, they were very qualified to give that feedback. It was okay. Their feelings. It was their emotion. And then I had the choice of listening to it or not. But it's interesting to me. I could do those smiley sheets. If the room has 500 people in it and 499 people give me great reviews and one person doesn't, which one do I listen to?
Right.
The negative one. It's so stupid and we all know better, but I still do it. So that's why with smiley sheets, I'm not a huge fan, but I am a fan of getting very qualified feedback. So sometimes if I have a professional speaker in the room, I'll say to them, I want you to look at this section of my speech and let me know what could I do better, what do I need to delete, you know, that kind of thing. So I think there's ways to solicit feedback. We just have to get better at doing it, Deirdre.
Yeah, I think you give some really good advice about the qualified feedback because it's so true. You don't know. There's 500 people in the audience or 1,000 or however many. You don't know what kind of day they've had, and they might not even know the first thing about what it means to give a good speech or they're just having a bad day. So I like that. I think that's really good advice, Neen. And I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts because we're just going to take a really quick break. We're going to give some love to our sponsor. And in the next segment, Neen will share her thoughts on productivity and some of the strategies that will help you to be more productive.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communications and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from interest to action, giving you a roadmap that fosters deeper engagement and forges stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformance.com. Thank you.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. I've been chatting with Neen James, who is a keynote speaker, a leadership coach, and we've been talking about what it's like and what you need to do to become a speaker, and Neen has given some really, really great advice. Neen, before we get into our productivity talk, I did want our listeners to hear a little bit about some of the good free resources when you're interested in speaking.
Yeah, there's a blog on my website, neenjames.com. If you go to blog and you just do a search by speaker or professional speaker, you'll see there's a whole blog which lists a number of resources. I would recommend that you start with the National Speakers Association. They produce 2 tools that might be really interesting for your listeners. One is Speaker Magazine, so there's even a magazine for speakers, and you can get a digital version of that free online. And the second resource is the digital magazine, the audio magazine called Voices of Experience. We call it VOE for short, but Voices of Experience you can download from iTunes. And what I'd recommend to people who are really interested in the art and the business of speaking is go back to the 2013 year. It was probably my most favorite year ever. The host was a gentleman by the name of Theo Andros, and he's a brilliant businessman, a fantastic speaker, and I loved his year. So those 2 resources are Speaker Magazine and Voices of Experience. And if you go to neenjames.com blog, you'll see those listed on there as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much for sharing the free resources. They're really helpful. And maybe now we can just pivot a little bit and talk about productivity. What does productivity mean to you?
I believe that you don't have time to do everything. You only have time to do what matters. And so what productivity means to me is it's not actually about time because you can't manage time. It's going to happen whether you like it or not. It's really about how do we manage our attention? How do we manage our energy? So to me, the focus is really on how can I achieve twice as much in half the amount of time using the attention and the energy that I have?
Now, is that almost, I want to say, was it Tim Ferriss who wrote the 4-hour work week? Is it similar to that where you're just maximizing your time, or are you really prioritizing? You're making a great effort to understand that I'm going to knock these things out of my life or out of my business day because they really shouldn't have my attention.
You know, Tim is a great author, and he has some fantastic information. But the reality is, people can't run their business in 4 hours. I don't care who they are. I'm not 4 hours a week. And he talks about an hour a month of email. I mean, that's just crazy town. But what I love about Tim's work is he talks about outsourcing your life. So he has some great points, but I don't think his book is practical for the everyday person. So I don't advocate all the strategies, but I do love what he says about outsourcing your life. I do believe that you can get hyper-productive when you know your productivity style. You need to know whether you are a morning person or a night owl and find the time that works best for you. You also need to know whether you're a planner and you love to map things out, or whether you're a crammer and you do things at the last minute. And we detail these things in our book called Folding Time. I think it's important that people understand their productivity style. But prioritization will always be vital because, like I said, you don't have time to do everything. You only have time to do what matters. And the only one who can determine what matters is you.
Absolutely. And I'm thinking that you're looking, do you look at your business priority and your family life priority separately? Is everything a blend? Are you tackling it all at once? Where do you start when it comes to your productivity?
You know, I have a huge advantage of being an entrepreneur, and so I have the ability to choose what my day looks like. And some people listening to this may not have that same choice. They may have set hours. So as an entrepreneur, part of that, you asked me why I did it, my desire for freedom, that's to have choice around how I spend my time. I don't believe that they're separate. And if you were to look at my to-do list, I'm still the girl who writes a old-fashioned on-paper to-do list. The to-do list is divided in half. It's a piece of paper, and on the left it has work, and on the right it has home. Because I'm one person. But for people who are working for someone else, who have set hours, I would recommend that you segment your time so that you can also make sure not only that you get the deliverables done for the business that you're working in, but that you take care of the person that you are and the relationships you have. No one can prescribe what is right or wrong for an individual. You know, people talk about work-life balance, which is such a myth. I mean, that's a stupid phrase. Nobody can prescribe that for you. You can only determine. And so for me, there are going to be some priorities, Deidre. It's really vital I take care of my health because of the sort of lifestyle I've chosen. I choose to stand on a stage in front of thousands of people. It kind of matters if I don't show up, you know? So, and when I show up, I have to be well. And I travel because part of what I do requires me to be on planes, trains, and automobiles. And so that means I've got to take care of my energy level because I stand in service of that audience. That's the job I've chosen. So making time to go for a run or do a bar class or eat a healthy meal is sort of not negotiable for me because it's the only way I can deliver business. So they're very blended in my life because I've chosen the lifestyle that I have.
Neen, are you, I'm always concerned with being well and try, because I know if I'm not well, then I can't give to all the many people that I want to give to around me. When you say that, you know, taking care of your energy, is this a daily thing that you're focused on? Do you, every day, do you make sure that you have time for yourself, or is it more you're going to run a very, oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, so, I have to. And here's the thing. I mean, anyone listening to this, if you've ever put on weight, I'm not very tall. So I'm 4'10 and a half. So when I'm little 4'10 and a half, I know I sound like I'm 5, but I promise I'm older. On my body, you know, when I put on 10 pounds, it's so noticeable because I'm so little, right? And so to someone else, they might think, 10 pounds is nothing. But to me, that's a lot. And so, and that's what happened. In the summer, I was in great shape and I was running and I was feeling great. And then because of some, you know, just an insane life and taking my focus away from my health, I put on 10 pounds. it's real easy to put on 10 pounds. It's real hard to take off 10 pounds. And so I had to recruit a food coach who I text daily everything that I put in my mouth. I have a running coach, so I run with him a couple times a week. I mean, awesome. I make it a priority because I have to, because we only get one body. We only get one life to make it the most amazing life we can. So, yes, it has to be a priority for me. Now, the trick in my life is I need to work out early. So because of the kind of person I am, I find that if I can get a run-in or an early morning bar class, if I get that done in the morning, the rest of the day seems to go better. I have better energy. I sleep better. If I put it off until the afternoon, I'm more likely to cancel a class or not go for a run because I think, oh, I could finish this report or I could do this email or I could. So for me, it is a daily, it's a daily challenge. And by the way, I don't win every day. I don't always do everything that I want to do. But if I get it done before I think about not doing it, it's more likely. Now, one of my tricks is I leave my workout gear beside my bed at night, so I have to put it on as soon as I get up in the morning because if I step over it, I feel bad for myself. So it's a stupid little trick, but I do the same thing when I travel. I always put my workout gear beside my bed. So it's a little life hack, but it seems to work for me.
You know, you just read my mind because I was going to ask about when you travel, and you answered the question. So you actually take this regimen on the road, which I think is
staying healthy on the road. Is hard. Yeah. I even take my own food, which makes me sound so crazy. But
no, that's
I boil
not crazy at all.
Hard-boiled eggs. I pack almonds. I pack Riva bars. I drink gallons of water on the road. And it's not very convenient, but it means that I always know that I have breakfast. I always know that I have a protein source. And that's important, I think, for those people, whether they're traveling in their car because their salespeople are doing calls or they're traveling through airports because their job requires that. It's really hard to stay healthy, and it's really easy to be tempted by yummy-smelling fries or potato chips or some chocolate. I don't always win, like I said, but I try and be very diligent about what I put in my body.
Well, you know what? I do too. This is going to sound absolutely crazy, but I feel like my body knows when I'm being good to it because we, our family, we have three vegans in our house. They're all 20-somethings, our kids. And my husband and I are very supportive of that lifestyle. So we're into our tofu and our tempeh and our beans and our rice. And our bodies are used to that. And the energy level that I have when I'm home and when I'm doing my local consulting or even my local speaking in New York City, when I go out on the road, and I do take food with me, but not to the level of the tofu, the beans, the rice, and all the things that I said, the food is different. And, you know, it's like, it's hard to find things to eat, and you're getting more things that you normally wouldn't have in your diet. It's just, your body feels it. You're tired, you're sluggish, you're not the same. It's interesting.
Even harder as a vegan, honey. Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine. Like, it's so much harder. But I think the trick is for anyone who's listening is find what works for you. Find things that you enjoy. And I do believe that the body that you have is the only one you have. And until they can invent technology or some sort of pill, I'm stuck with having to eat healthy and work out. I got it, you know?
It's just the way the cards are dealt. And that's awesome. It's a good deck, you know? No complaints. You actually mentioned about, I heard the word focus as you were talking. So I, you know, with all the things that are going on and you have your priorities, it's one thing to set your day, but to stay present and focused is another thing. So how do you stay focused?
You know, I actually have some tricks. So for me, I time block. So I say I'm going to do this activity for this many times, and I work in 15-minute increments. So that's why I run my whole life in 15-minute increments. So I can manage focus for 15 minutes, but after that, I start to get a little fidgety. I also use apps. Like, I use an app called Freedom App, and it blocks social media. And I think that's important, too, when I'm trying to get some work done, because it's so much more interesting to be on Facebook than it is to write a comment. And so for me, I think that, you know, I use this app called Freedom, and it makes a massive difference. I also am very deadline-oriented, so I tend to make sure that I set myself deadlines. So if I tell a client, hey, I'm going to have this to you by this time, I have to do it. And that way what happens is I'm setting that deadline for myself, but I'm honoring a commitment I've made out loud. So I'm very deadline oriented. So you can time block, you can use apps like Freedom App, but you can also set deadlines. And I feel like if you make yourself accountable to someone else, you're more likely to get it done. So that's how I stay focused.
Oh my gosh, well, that's really good advice. I'm going to check out the Freedom app that blocks the social media because, you know, I can't keep myself off of Twitter. You know, it's hard. That's definitely, I don't want to call it a vice, but Twitter is something I love to go on Twitter because I know whenever I go on, somebody's asking me a question and I'm helping them. So the 15-minute increments, I think that's excellent. I don't work in 15-minute increments. I like work in 30 to 60-minute increments, but okay. I do notice being fidgety. So that's interesting that you said that.
Try a little bit less. I mean, that could be work.
Yeah, I'm going to try less. And for our listeners, how are you planning these 15-minute increments, if you don't mind the question? Number one, two-part, are you scheduling yourself? And do you do it a week in advance? Are you looking the night before and you know exactly every 15 minutes? How does that work in your world?
So I am very fortunate to have Maria. My Maria is the queen of memes, so she schedules my whole life. I live a very scheduled life, but I also have a very spontaneous life, which may sound like I am contradicting myself. But whenever we meet with someone, it tends to be in 15-minute increments, and so that makes my life easier from a calendar management point of view. I also manage social media in 15 minutes. So, for example, in the morning, I'll grab my green juice or a coffee, and I will sit and sip it, and I will go across Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, Snapchat, whatever I'm playing with. I will then make sure that I can get as much done in that 15 minutes as possible.
That's awesome.
So that's one thing that I do. But I also find that if I'm going to meet with someone, I always say, hey, let's have a 15-minute, what I call a tally coffee. So you make a coffee and I make a coffee and we talk on the tally phone. It takes no more than 15 minutes. I do tally cocktails on a Friday.
Then I love it.
You know, so I think if you can choose to educate others the power of 15 minutes, they will really respect that as well. So you say to people in your team or people or your clients, even with all my clients, I just say, let's have a 15-minute call. And some people don't think you can achieve a lot in 15 minutes, but 15 dedicated minutes.
A focus, right?
Exactly. It's so much more powerful than people messing around for an hour. And I'm hyper-focused, so I think that's the way to really channel that energy and manage your energy and your attention in 15-minute increments.
Well, I also learned, and I don't know if I learned it working with different corporations and corporate type of executives, but if you come to the meeting prepared, you can get anything done in 15 minutes. Because that's all you're going to have, right, with an executive. You don't get a lot of time.
And the other thing is, try and have a standing meeting. So if you have a standing meeting is a quick meeting. So I used to do this in my corporate time, my corporate teams. I used to get my call centers, my sales teams. When I was running large teams, we'd always have 15-minute standing meetings because that way, if you're standing, you're not going to waste time. There's not going to be small talk. People are not going to get distracted. So, and I think in a world of technology ruining so much of what we do, it's a very powerful way to keep people focused.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, you need focus. There's only so much time in a day. You've given a lot of great tips. Just curious. So you have this amazing career. You do. You have so much energy, and I can tell that you're truly motivational. We appreciate everything that you're sharing. Is there somebody who has helped you, inspired you, you know, maybe it's because of this person that's why you are where you are today? Anyone special you want to mention?
Yeah, I mean, I have so many, but the person who really helped me on my speaking career, and I saw him when I very first started loving to speak, and his name is Matt Church, and he is truly one of the top 25 speakers in the world. He is an amazing speaker, a phenomenal businessman, a true thought leader, very dedicated to his beautiful wife and family. So he really was my first mentor and became a dear, dear friend, and then later a business partner. So Matt Church absolutely, truly one of the best in the world. And then when I look at people who influence my life now in my career, I look to people like Lou Heckler, who is my speech coach, and he is phenomenal, a great human being, but just a brilliant man. And then there's other speakers I've had the benefit of learning from, but also calling my friends, Mark Sanborn, Connie Podesta, two of the best in the business, who have been generous with their advice and their guidance. And it's so lovely when I get the opportunity to work with them now, you know, as their friend, but also as a peer. So there's something really cool about that. So I think sometimes what happens is we get these mentors and then we become friends.
Oh, but I mean, that's just the best case scenario. It sounds like you've surrounded yourself with wonderful people and professionals. And it shows. It shows in who you are and what you do. I'm hoping that you can give some advice to all of the women and men who are listening, who maybe want to become entrepreneurs like you, excel in their own businesses. What can you share with them? What do they need to know from you?
You know, here's some things that I would just, some quick fire things. I would say you have to hustle every single day. This speaking is amazing, but it doesn't matter how great you are on the stage if you can't book a job. So you've got to be able to hustle. You've got to be able to hustle and work it, and you've got to be able to take no, and you've got to be able to pick up the phone and then do it again. You've got to be able to pay attention, not only pay attention to what's important to you, but pay attention to what your potential clients are telling you, about what the market's telling you, about what your profession is telling you. And you've got to create an amazingly incredible, phenomenal support system. I have the most amazing people in my life, and it's because of them that I am able to do what I do. So creating a support team is vital. So that would probably be my top tips for anyone who wants to become an entrepreneur and have success.
Those are three great tips. Hustle, pay attention, and create that awesome support network. Okay, well, last question, and this is super simple. Where can my listeners learn more about you?
If you Google me and James, I am the only one you're going to find. So neandjames.com is the best place, where there's hundreds of articles you can download for free on the blog. There, my YouTube channel has lots of little videos that are digestible and shareable. So I would love it if we could connect. So that list of it, and you mentioned Twitter, one of my favorite places to play.
Excellent. Neen, thank you so much. I mean, you've shared a tremendous amount of information about your journey as a speaker and really kind of nailing down how other people can start their speaking careers. So truly appreciated. And we just appreciate all of your insights. So thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for the privilege of serving your listeners. I'm excited to hear what they all think.
Oh, well, thank you. And I also want to thank all of them for tuning into Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge, brought to you by Pure Performance Communications on the socialnetworkstation.com. You can reach Pure Performance at www.pureperformancecom.com. Women Worldwide is produced by SNI, and the opinions of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of Social Network Intermedia, LLC, or the Social Network Station.